ladies and gentlemen. This is Red Ice Radio. I'm Henrik. Thank you for tuning in. Good to have you all with us here today. RedIce.tv is the site where you can tune into our shows, TV episodes, and videos. And of course, you can also hear us on YouTube, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spreaker, and TuneIn if that fits you better. But we do have RSS feeds on the website if you would like to use iTunes or some other favorite podcast app. Today on the show, we have Paul Kersey back on the show. He's the author of Whitey on the Moon and also The Truth About Selma and many more titles that are all about dispelling the myths surrounding the civil rights movement and what America has actually transformed into in the wake of the supposed improvements towards justice and equality. And of course, he is behind SBPDL.com, StuffBlackPeopleDon'tLike.com. Check out the site for much more. Good to have you back on the show, Paul. Thanks for coming on again.
Hey, it's great to be on. Before we get started, I wanted to thank you for your fantastic coverage of my good friend Richard Spencer's NPI event. I was watching most of the event live, and you guys did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, thank you. We're actually going to do some more of that. We're going to have a conference up in Stockholm coming up with some of Spencer's friends and associates, Fred Berg and some of the others, so more of that coming. But thanks for mentioning that. It's always a lot of fun, you know, doing those kinds of events, and it's always difficult doing it live, but I think it's worth it at the end of the day. And also, of course, to give people a chance to actually see what goes on the inside, considering how the media treated that event. And I think people who actually took a look at the actual speeches and what went on probably got a different view, I hope anyway, than what the media was giving out, you know?
You guys did a phenomenal job. Again, the technology for disseminating our ideas, again, it could be snuffed out at a moment if our enemies become too frightened by our reach and by our continued capabilities. And it's a testament, though, to the investments that you and everyone that you're associated with and your fantastic listeners made and their contributions to fund such a such an A-plus organization.
Awesome. Thanks, Paul. Well, let's just kind of dive into this a little bit here. We've been through the first week so far of Black History Month, of course. How have you been enjoying it so far?
Well, you know, I have been one of the few people, and I don't say that lightly or heroically or, you know, from a conceited standpoint, but I've been one of the few people who have challenged the narrative of this new film that just came out in January called Hidden Figures. In fact, I think we actually talked on it the first time you and I spoke. I mentioned that there was this terrifying film coming out that wanted to retcon the whole concept of NASA and what individual white people collectively accomplished with the moon landing. And Hidden Figures has been a huge hit, primarily with non-whites, actually. There was a study that showed that most of the people who've gone to see the film, 65% have been non-whites and primarily women. So it's basically to inflate their perception and self-worth that these three never-before-mentioned women somehow single-handedly got the men, the white men, into space and beat the Russians. You know, that's the new myth. That's it. Every couple of years, there's a new movie that comes out. You know, a couple of years ago in America, it was George Lucas's self-funded movie called Red Tails, which basically wanted to put forth the narrative that the Tuskegee Airmen single-handedly defeated the Nazis in close combat aerial battles, which is just couldn't be further from the truth. And that movie bombed.
Didn't it get a couple of awards already or something like that? I haven't been keeping up with that.
It's going to win Best Picture at the Academy Awards here in a couple of weeks. And it won the Screen Actors Guild Award for Best Ensemble.
That's right. That's
which is the equivalent. It's the equivalent of the Best Picture. And one of the female actresses in the movie, in a New York Times article, she basically attacked a piece that I did for Peter Brumlow's VDare.com, saying that, yeah, you know, some people are actually questioning the history, the historical nature of our film, when, I'm going to be quite blunt here. Hidden Figures is pure science fiction. Yes, there were black women who were associated with NASA and its forerunner, NACA, but they were hired in the early 1950s. And so you have this idea that somehow in the 1960s there was pervasive anti-black discrimination, and yet at the same time somehow these three black women were still hired by NASA to be these integral parts of the space program. It doesn't make any sense the way it's pitched. If you read the articles at VDare, there are three that, again, one of them was attacked in the New York Times, and the person who wrote the story for the New York Times actually contacted me and requested further comments. And I have a rule that I won't talk to media. I don't care. You know, I don't talk to fake news. I'd rather talk to you and other people, Jared. And I talked to the guys with over the Daily Show the other day, and I'm actually going to do a pretty definitive podcast with Greg Johnson of Countercurrents about Hidden Figures. But my rules: I don't talk to the fake news. I don't talk to the Lugan Press, the corporate prestige media, because their agenda is entirely 100% anti-white. But it was really cool to think that, my God, I've triggered one of the actresses in this movie that was primarily made to denigrate and defame all that individual white people collectively accomplished, when in a span of 66 years, he went from the first flight with the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk in 1903 in North Carolina to men stepping on the moon, Heinrich, in 1969. That's so hard to contemplate.
Yeah.
What has it been? It's been, so we're not even 50 years since we last flew to, 1972 was the last time we went to the moon. So 50 years, that'll be what, 2022? The last time we went to the moon. So think about that when in the terms of how much we've regressed since we were progressing from that first flight in 1903 to landing on the moon. Then 3 years later, that was in 1972 with Gene Cernik, who just died. So sad that the last man who stepped on the moon died about a month and a half ago before Trump's inauguration.
Right.
And it's kind of fitting because we basically in the past roughly 45 years, we've spent all that money and trillions more that could have gone to space exploration, Heinrich, to trying to prove that race doesn't exist and that we're all equal in this great egalitarian experiment, which, of course, had a price tag, and that was giving up the heavens, giving up exploration, and ensuring that the proliferation of non-whites occurred all throughout the world. And as we see now, that population pressure from Africa and from the Middle East, the extra population has to go somewhere, and they're headed to Sweden, to America, to France, to Great Britain. Luckily, the Eastern European nations are saying no, but as the Islamization of so many of the great European countries and America happens, how much longer can they hold out when America can just basically pull Serbia to Hungary and to Poland and to these wonderful countries, that Czechoslovakia? It's so frightening. But at the same time, we have to have hope, because Americans, and you asked the question to pull it all back to where we started from, my friend. You asked me how am I enjoying Black History Month. I've kind of forgotten that this propaganda is going on because I've been so excited and influenced by Trump. And, you know, the media tried to claim that the travel ban on the Seven Nations was a Muslim ban. And yet, if you look at the polls, the media has been hammering the fact that this is a Muslim ban. It's a Muslim ban. And yet, guess what? People still approve of it, even though they've been told over and over again in America that this is a Muslim ban. And in spite of all that's going on right now at the Ninth Circuit Court out in California, and Washington and Oregon in a 3-0 decision, upholding the ban, the stay on Donald Trump's travel ban, which is incredible when the executive branch of the government actually has the right. The president does have the right to deny aliens. We're headed toward some great crisis in the world, and I don't think many people really appreciate what's about to happen in terms of this moral vacuum that is about to explode in a lot of ways. And I don't know. I in my opinion, I kind of think we're ending the need for a Black History Month, because I think most Americans don't really care anymore. Yeah, the propaganda is bad for school kids in my country, but for the most part, we live such disengaged lives. White people in America are working so hard just to make ends meet for their families, for their children. And the propaganda now, I mean, I think most people, this is going to sound, it might not sound apocalyptic, but I think a lot of people in this country are, I'll just put it bluntly, I think a lot of people in this country are ready to go to war for Donald Trump. And you're, I mean that probably to a lot of your listeners, it's going to sound crazy, but the facts are simple. Since 9/11, America has done the exact opposite of what we should have done. And that is we've increased Islamic immigration, Muslim immigration, migration from Muslim countries to our country. When 9/11 should have been the great moment where we reevaluated the so-called values that are at the heart of this experiment. Yet we basically decided to capitulate.
Yeah.
And you and I were joking before the conversation about how in France today, it was announced that they are going to build, I believe they're going to spend $22 million, I think I remember this correctly, to build a permanent wall around the Eiffel Tower because of the threat of Islamic terrorism. And Heinrich, they're calling this not a wall. They're calling this an aesthetic perimeter to protect the Eiffel Tower. Wonderful use of the lexicon to describe.
Newspeak there, yeah.
It is newspeak. George Orwell would be charmed by this usage of just of beauteous language to describe what is commonly known as a wall, which, you know, anyone who owns a home or lives in an apartment and isn't homeless, they know that walls protect themselves and their families from the elements, and more importantly from people they don't want to come into their home to take what they've bought, what they own, their clothing, their food, their furniture, and to violate the safety and sanctity of their family. And yet now in France, to protect the Eiffel Tower, they build an aesthetic perimeter. Just wonderful use of the language to try and put makeup on a pig. I think that's the expression in America. I haven't heard that in a while, but that's basically what they're trying to do here. And in America, at the same time, we have white liberal, and I believe that the three judges in this decision, I want to say that two were Gentiles, white liberal Gentiles, and one was a Jewess. We basically have created a royalty out of the judiciary, and somehow these people are able to dictate policy for a country and decide the fate of who has the right to immigrate here. I mean, we basically live in a world now where every person on the planet, all, 7 billion people, are Americans waiting to burst out. And
that's right.
Have a right to immigrate here.
Yep.
And that's what this decision basically boils down to. And we are at that point where the battle between the nation state and globalism is going to come to a finality.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thought that we would actually get to see this. I was always worried that it wouldn't happen in my lifetime, because this really is the culmination of, my God, going back to the view that Nietzsche talks about in Not Beyond Good and Evil, the genealogy of morals. And this is basically what it's coming down to. A lot of the thing, if you want to read what I believe is the greatest treatise on where we are, from a philosophical standpoint, it would be Nietzsche's Genealogy of Morals. And this battle, it doesn't go back to Enlightenment. It doesn't go back to to Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. It precedes. What's fascinating, the same year that Wealth of Nations came out was also the year, I believe, that Thomas Malthus's book on population came out. But it goes farther back. This is a millennial old battle, and I'm just so glad that Trump and Putin have had their come to Jesus meeting on the phone. And I wish that Trump, instead of inviting Trudeau to the White House, would have invited Putin.
That's going to happen.
Because we would have. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
But it's important that we see a lot of these neocons' heads explode. Just the other day in America, at a AEI event here in Washington D.C. in our nation's capital, Bill Kristol, the neocon father of the Never Trump movement, was debating Charles Murray, the author of The Bell Curve and Falling Apart, which is about the white working class collapsing. And Bill Kristol basically said that he was in favor of the white working class being replaced by Mexican illegal aliens.
That's right.
Shocking statement. Yep. My friend Henry Wolf at the New Century Foundation, American Renaissance, was there, and he covered it. And he's the guy who broke that. And it was only because he showed up and recorded the audio, turned that into a story that then the Daily Caller and a number of other entities, organizations picked up. It became a big story that this guy, Bill Kristol, who was so excited back in the early 2000s to utilize the sons of the white working class nationwide to die in a pointless war in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, bastard.
Now he basically castigates him. I mean, this guy, this guy is the definition of treason, who deserves a quick, speedy trial and a public execution as a reminder of what happens to those who advocate on behalf of a foreign nation using our citizens as fodder for
such
right. war.
And you said it was AEI, that's the American Enterprise Institute, major neocon organization. They've been dictating a lot, I think, actually, behind the scenes for a long time. So it's good that this is being exposed and finally people are actually beginning to realize where these people's allegiance really stand. Because they would sell out white people in a heartbeat, and that's what they've been doing all this time, of course.
It's incredible. They'll leech on to whatever will protect their interests as long as it opposes, as long as it protects their true interest. And as a ethno-state guy, I don't oppose the state of Israel. I think we could have great relations. But when you use patriotism and Christians end time theology to justify support of Israel and a lavish support of Israel, I think that's sick. And what Bill Kristol's doing is treasonous, and it deserves a speedy trial and execution. That's really all there is to say about it.
Yeah. Let me return back to something, because we talked a bit about the enthusiasm around Trump and everything, and speaking about space travel and exploration and how far we've regressed in this regard while we've been trying to instead enforce diversity and equality and all these kinds of values, and our own scientific development has just plummeted. But during the inauguration, he did, talk about unlocking the mysteries of space. Did you catch that?
Yeah, I don't want to get too into that comment, but I was absolutely floored by his, the more I think back to his inaugural address and the things he was talking about. President Trump basically talked about ending and eradicating disease, not just what you're talking about, unlocking the heavens and space, but basically using science to find a way to end diseases. I mean, you're right. There was so much Peter Thiel. It's fascinating because during that speech, I heard about 95% Steve Miller and 5% Peter Thiel. And it was incredible because you realize that Donald Trump is truly listening to the Steve Bannon, Steve Miller, Peter Thiel wing of his advisors. And when you look at all that he's done in the first couple of days, you saw Matt Drudge get pretty upset with him for the whole lack of tax cuts and attacking Obamacare. But, Trump wants to basically assert his place in history by going after, the travel ban and start the deportation, going after the gangs. But you're right, though. That was such a powerful moment during that inauguration, because he has also put out some overtures toward going to the moon by 2022, which would be 2 years into his second term.
Nice.
And it's exciting that he wants to return. This is also my theory that I have. I need to write about this. One of the reasons why he wants to work so closely with the Russians is because the Russian space program is very healthy. They haven't been as flummoxed and weighted down and pulled down by diversity initiatives that have derailed the United States space program, where we basically had to comply with EEOC standards across the board, which, as I know, in Way on the Moon, NASA fought tooth and nail before the Apollo program was abandoned in 1972. NASA was only about 5% black, and of that, three-fourths of the employees were secondary roles, like janitors, basically non-essential personnel. And, you know, for your listeners worldwide, you know, you have to remember back in the late 1960s, early 1970s, America was still a country that was basically a white black country. We hadn't had the mass migration yet from the American Indian and the Oriental world. It was a white black country, 90% white, 10% black. Yep. And even by 1972, the massive push for diversity and the EEOC demands had made sure that 20% almost every fatal federal agency was black. I mean, it's insane when you think about it. They were overrepresented by 100% in every federal agency, just because the federal government was and has increasingly become a jobs program for otherwise unemployable blacks and minorities. Once you get a federal job, it's basically impossible to be fired, and there's no accountability. And it's been the primary growth engine of the black and non-Asian minority middle class in the United States. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why the three counties with the highest per capita income surround Washington, D.C. And there's a reason why in those counties minorities have such high per household income, and that's because they're employed in a profession, federal government, that otherwise they can't be replicated by the private sector.
Really interesting. You know, I wanted to ask you about what you think about some of the recent attacks that's happened on, since the inauguration, really, all the so-called protests, the violent riots that have occurred. We've had, of course, the violence at Gavin McInnes events, Milo events, and they backed up by the Hollywood leftist elites calling to full-on violence against pretty much white people, but definitely Trump supporters.
Yeah, at the SAG Awards that we talked about earlier, where Hidden Figures won Best Ensemble, one of the actors or one of the writers for a show on Netflix.
You know what? I have it here. Let me play it, Paul. Let me just play it here.
In light of all that's going on in the world today, it's difficult to celebrate the already celebrated Stranger Things. But this award from you, who take your craft seriously and earnestly believe, like me, that great acting can change the world, is a call to arms from our fellow craftsmen and women to go deeper and through our art to battle against fear, self-centeredness, and exclusivity of our predominantly narcissistic culture, and through our craft to cultivate a more empathetic and understanding society by revealing intimate truths that serve as a forceful reminder to folks that when they feel broken and afraid and tired, they are not alone. We are united in that we are all human beings, and we are all together on this horrible, painful, joyous, exciting, and mysterious ride that is being alive.
Here it comes.
Now, as we act in the continuing narrative of Stranger Things, we 1983 Midwesters will repel bullies. We will shelter freaks and outcasts, those who have no homes. We will get past the lies. We will hunt monsters. And when we are at a loss amidst the hypocrisy and the casual violence of certain individuals and institutions, we will, as per Chief Jim Hopper, punch some people in the face when they seek to destroy the meat.
There it is. Yeah. So what? Who is he talking about there? Who is he going to punch in the face? All these Nazis, right?
Well, it's fascinating. I mean, where is a more narcissistic culture than Hollywood?
I know.
More self-centered. It's actually hard to even... to even put into words that opening part where he had memorized. It had a nice cadence, I'll give him that. It sounded quite nice. It had a nice rhythm and rhyme to it. Got a little off the rails when he got to that latter part where he wanted to punch monsters in the face. But you know, he's talking about those who deviate from the accepted script, that egalitarianism and a strident devotion to egalitarianism is the most accepted form of public religion and in the United States of America. And any deviation from that is a heresy. And, you know, those who engage in egalitarian thought are engaging in heretical activities that only a punch in the face can remedy. And obviously, he's probably watched Mr. Spencer, my friend Richard, being punched one too many times, being attacked and assaulted in an unprovoked attack, which, as you and I both know and your listeners know, liberals across the country are justifying and condoning, as opposed to condemning violence because someone is speaking their mind. It goes back to the whole concept of Stefan Molyneux that there are no arguments to be made. And I want to point out that back in 2014, I believe I started talking about this concept that America was irredeemable, that there was no way that there could be a constructive dialogue between the increasingly bellicose nature of the right-left paradigm, and that as 2015 came along, I still like to use that concept of America being irredeemable. And I always talked about that great line from the movie Independence Day, when the president is telepathically linked to the alien, and the president says something along the lines of, you know, can we negotiate a peace? Can our people coexist? Can there be a peace between us? And then the alien looks at him and says, peace, no peace. President responds, what is it you want us to do? And the alien says, you know, telepathically, die.
Die. Yeah.
That's die. Right. And to me, I always go back to that one scene more so than any other line from a movie when I try and think about what motivates the modern left when they want to pull down a statue of some Confederate right now in Charlottesville, Virginia. They're going to tear down a Robert E. Lee statue that's been around for 100 years. You see this nationwide in Baltimore and New Orleans, calls to pull down statues, rename schools for American founding fathers. I've always wondered what motivates them and if they think that there's going to be virtue and gifts bestowed by the rising tide of color, an appreciation for whites, self-immolation, and sacrificing their civilization at the altar of this new burgeoning non-white civilization that's growing in our country and in the United States. And it's really simple. There's never going to be coexistence, regardless of how many people slap that stupid sticker on their car in America. There won't be peace. They simply want us to do what happened in Haiti and what is increasingly happening in the former Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, and South Africa. They want us to die. And it is that simple. And to even try and have a constructive dialogue and believe that there can be common ground, it's suicidal. And my belief is that the actions by the Ninth Circuit Court and by these increasingly anti-American leftists who cheerlead the Islamization of America, which is basically using Muslims as, they're weaponizing Muslims and immigrants as a missile to be lobbed at the historical American majority of white people, and destroy the social capital they have. You know, you always wonder why they put all these refugees in small towns all across the country. And that's because you destroy social capital, you know?
Yeah,
there's a reason why Minneapolis, Minnesota was bombarded with so many of these Somalis. There's a reason why Boise, Idaho, and all these small towns across the country, it's you're weaponizing demographics. And I mean, you look at what's happening in France, and I've always worried that the whole National Front stuff is just too little too late. I mean, Steve Saylor came up with an amazing study that he just published the other day at Talkie Mag, where something like 40% of new births in France have sickle cell anemia. Do you know what that means? That means that they have African DNA. That means that they are largely Africans being born in France because of this massive invasion and this open borders nonsense. And I just, there's no, you know, Heinrich, there's no example in human history of what's happening right now. And that to me is what is so disheartening, because we can't look and try and use history as our guide, because everything that's happening is a complete inversion of what we've known to have occurred in the past. I mean,
yeah,
we're watching the civilization fall on its knees without even trying to raise up arms. And instead, anyone who raises up arms, as you know, when you're what's going on in Scandinavia and Great Britain and in Germany, anyone who even, you know, raises up an arm to post a Facebook post that's critical of what's going on, they run the risk of being thrown in jail.
Did you see the cop story, by the way, out of Sweden? There was one cop that came out and actually talked about all the crime that's going on in Sweden, responsibility, of course, of overrepresentation of immigrants and stuff like that. And was one, it's just remarkable for the listener who not familiar with the climate in Sweden of how repressive it is when one Facebook post can basically just unleash all hell in all of Sweden. And there was a supportive group that was set up for this police officer that made this comment on Facebook afterwards. And I think now it's almost up to 200,000 followers, which is a lot for Sweden, a smaller population. Amazing.
Yeah, you know, that's the greater crime, is noticing the consequences of what should never have transpired to begin with. And I did see that story. It was heavily trafficked in the United States on all of the so-called conservative sites. I think we've reached a point now where that term means nothing anymore. I feel like the whole left-right paradigm is so done, it's so over, and we're all sort of waiting to kind of figure out what that next term is going to be, what that next word is going to be to describe. I mean, it's basically, on one side, it's so explicitly anti-white, and yet on the other side, it's an implicit whiteness that refuses to admit what going toward explicit whiteness will mean.
Right.
Because that will ensure that the anti-white side is defeated quickly. And it could be this could all be over very shortly if people were capable of understanding that the implicit whiteness that elected Donald Trump just morph into explicit whiteness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what keeps me so excited. Because the more we see the media clamp down, the more we see Hollywood unite and declare war on Trump, the more we see CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, like the CEO of Under Armour, who just came out. And as an American, he said, hey, I'm excited by President Trump and by the things he wants to do to help the American workforce and the American workers, because he has a great business mind. And he's going to improve life for Americans. That guy is now being protested. I think his name is Kevin Plank, the CEO of Under Armour.
Mm-hmm.
Because people misconstrued what he said and they thought, oh, you support President Trump. You're a Nazi. You're a white supremacist. You want to deny Muslims entry to our country. And a lot of the non-white pitchmen and spokeswomen for Under Armour, they've come out and attacked the company, and it's like, you motherfuckers, you know, pardon the Spanish.
That's fine.
It's like, you piece, you know, seriously, all this guy did as a CEO, he has a responsibility to the stockholders of the publicly traded corporation known as Under Armour. And if the dollar is strong, if the American economy is strong, regardless of who is president, then guess what? Shareholders of Under Armour are going to see the stock price go up.
Right.
Because President Trump's actions as the chief executive officer are improving the economy. You know, interest rates might be rising just a little bit, but guess what? People are going to be spending more money. People have more more positive outlook on the economy. Yeah, that's great. Of course, any CEO that would publicly attack Donald Trump for his pro-American, pro-business activities and initiatives, they should be removed immediately, because they're inhibiting the possibility that that corporation could see its stock price rise. And you know, guess what? Private corporations that are publicly traded, corporations that are publicly traded have one responsibility, and that is to increase the share price. And if they issue a dividend, whether it's quarterly, hey, they've got to answer to stockholders. And this whole contrived attack on Under Armour, it just shows once again that America is irredeemable, and we're moving closer and closer to, it's not going to be a civil war. It's hostilities that cannot be remedied by practical politics. And that's all war is. It's a continuation of politics by another means. And it's increasingly obvious that that is going to transpire in the not too distant future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just been absolute, you know, unique circumstances that really has bloomed to the forefront recently with all these attacks, and then the open advocacy for going after Trump, and other companies are of course doing the same. It was it even like Lady Gaga was attacked for not going after Trump during the Super Bowl, you know, halftime show and stuff like that. And I don't know if you saw any of the commercials. I started to look at most of them, everything from Expedia to Google Home to of course Lumber 84, who even depicted the wall in it and stuff like that. It's just like everything's just hyper politicized, and as you say, more and more polarization. I question, like, is there any way back from this, you know?
And there should be. No one should want hostilities. No one should want violence. No one that is sane and rational should want agitation that leads to bloodshed. And yet it's not the so-called hateful, xenophobic, bigoted right that is pushing this. You've got, like you just said, you mentioned a couple companies. Budweiser is another one. Yeah. Their ridiculous commercial that tries to reimagine the whole creation of Anheuser-Busch. Airbnb did a ridiculous ad.
Oh, that
under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
I mean, again, to me, the only freedom that matters is freedom of association, and any business that wants to discriminate based on race, sex, gender, sexual orientation, I don't care. You know, they're private business. That's fine. That's their decision.
Yeah.
You know, the government shouldn't be stepping in to mandate that, oh gosh, if this business owner doesn't want to bake a cake or lease to a black or bake a cake for a gay person, my God, we gotta get them out of business. No. What the government should be doing is creating an environment where commerce thrives and where businesses aren't driven out of business by dangerous blacks. As we see in major cities all across the country, which is what Jim Crow tried to stop, which is what restrictive covenants on keeping blacks out of white communities, which of course would depreciate the value of homes, which is what happened. I mean, it goes back to your initial question, man, of Black History Month. This is the 52nd anniversary coming up in March of the March Across the Selma Bridge. My friend Hunter Wallace was kind enough to write a foreword to a book that I just did called The Truth About Selma. What happened when the marching stopped and the cameras left? And it basically, Selma is a blighted, ruined, depressed, 80% black city that confirms every fear that the architects of Jim Crow had for their posterity. And that is that once legal protections that mandated the safety of white civilization from the depravity of the African genome, once those were gone, you were left with Haiti, Liberia. You were left with all that's happened to Detroit, with what's happened to Baltimore, to Gary, Indiana, to New Orleans, to Memphis. I mean, it's a demographic nuclear bomb that Hiroshima and Nagasaki can recover from the atomic attacks that we did in 1945 to end World War II. But if you get a demographic bomb that overwhelms the civilization that white people created and then were forced to abandon, you can't recover from that. And
and they're telling us it's progress. This is the other thing, right? It comes in this kind of wrapper of, this is just, it's never been so good. We're progressing in the right direction. And of course, you, for noticing reality of it, is in fact the problem. You who are pointing this out, you should be you know, ashamed of yourself. You had an article that you posted on the website where you said very much what you said now. It's official. Blacks were safer when whites or slash Jim Crow controlled Selma than they are now that blacks control 80% of the city.
Well, yeah, blacks are 80% of Selma. The city was one of the more thriving centers of commerce in Alabama before the march, before MLK and John Lewis did their little march. And yet right now, I think Selma has 20,000 people. And in 2016, there were 17 homicides. And there were some really, really horrifying homicides. Like one of the murders was of a grandmother who was in her home on Christmas Day. And there was a drive-by shooting and she was killed. And in the article that was published, I want to say on WSFA.com, which is, I believe, the CBS, ABC, or NBC affiliate out of Montgomery, Alabama, they pointed out that her daughter said something about the horror of black-on-black crime, that this is just unconscionable that a grandmother could be gunned down in her home on Christmas Day in Selma. And back in 1994, I found this quote, and to me, it's always one that just sticks with me. The New York Times did a story on Selma, and they noted that the black-on-black crime in the city, even in 1994, rivaled anything, and it blew away anything that ever happened during Jim Crow, because Jim Crow was just a check on black dysfunction. It basically mandated that blacks do everything they possibly could to assimilate to white civilization. They basically they were basically mandated to do that. They were forced to do that by Jim Crow. It was the boot on their neck that if they deviated from it, that there would be discipline. There would be, you know, you had to have duty. And once you liberated blacks from the legal coercion to assimilate, you see what you get. You get Detroit, which is the ruined porn capital of the world. You get Newark, New Jersey, where I think a friend of mine sent me a story of dueling reverends who I think they had they pulled guns on each other in a church not too long ago. Some crazy story like that. You know, for your international listeners who really don't quite understand just how insane the situation is from a racial standpoint in America, back in 2015, when Selma, the movie, came out that Oprah Winfrey produced, there wasn't a movie theater opened in the city of Selma, Alabama. So they had to go in and reopen a movie theater just so they could show it, because the 80% black occupants, citizens of the city, they were incapable of creating the conditions where a movie theater could successfully open and flourish because of the high rates of crime and just the fact that there was no social capital. And to me, that was so funny. And then even better than that, when they celebrated the 50th anniversary of the march across the Selma Bridge, white people had to volunteer. And remember, Selma's only about 20% white now. White people had to volunteer to pick up trash all around Selma so that when people went there, they wouldn't be overwhelmed by the shocking amount of refuse that was all over, littered throughout the city, as if it was already the dystopian world that was depicted in the Pixar film WALL-E, when humans had to abandon Earth because of the massive amounts of trash and how they had ruined the environment.
Yeah, God, and then overpopulation on top of that, and it's a very frightening scenario that arises right now. I mean, we saw the same out of France. The I think it was around the central station there. People were walking around with their cell phones and shooting some of the footage of the refugees that were just like littering and causing. It looked like a trash pile, you know, in central Paris. It's not a pretty picture, you know. And the reality of this, of course, is also very, very, very difficult. But it poses that simple question of like, what is it that causes Western civilization and European founded countries to be in such a state that, you know, the rest of the world desires to come to these places? And why is it that the other ones haven't been able to achieve those things? I mean, if we look at the 84 lumber piece, the commercial, then it's simply, I guess, some luck of the draw or something that caused you know, white Americans to be able to achieve something that, let's say, the Mexicans weren't able to achieve, right? I mean, it's like, and these questions can't be asked. We're not allowed to notice these kinds of differences and variables.
Well, that's such a great point. It's all based upon this concept that everyone's equal, and yet somehow white people for centuries have had some extra ordinary power of privilege to colonize and take advantage of indigenous people. And I don't know, I guess somehow we were given some extra strength, shot of testosterone, shot of steroids that these other cultures, these other people. I hate that word culture, because culture is just a expression of a people. So scratch that I ever said that. You have all these other races that, you know, somehow, again, we all evolved equally. That's what the egalitarians tell us.
Yeah.
Evolution somehow impacted every other species, every other entity, every other being, every other thing that exists on the planet. But no, it didn't impact people. It didn't impact races. We're all equal. That doesn't make any sense. But yeah, I mean, you're right. For some reason, indigenous Europeans and the founding stock of the United States somehow have no right except for the right to be usurped by the non-white world.
Yeah.
And going back to that anecdote you had about the police officer in Sweden, anyone who dares deviate from the script must be mercilessly punished and branded as a heretic of this egalitarian thought, because they represent the true terrorist. Who cares how many Swedes are raped? Who cares how many Swedes are murdered?
That's just it. There's no discussion of these realities. It's just a continuous like deny, and put down everyone who addresses these things. And I mean, it's just, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to get people to open their eyes to these aspects. It was like, there's people getting violently attacked, murdered, raped out there, but solely due to the fact of who they are as racially, this is not being recognized. You saw the footage of the white Trump supporter in the Portland airport, right? It was, they were violently, you know, pushed into the airport, and then he was knocked out. Everyone was standing around and chanting and screaming. I mean, the hatred that these people have, and the glee and the joy they have when we are hurt and maybe even killed, is pretty scary, you know, to see this. And when these people start ganging up on white people, there's no consideration, there's no empathy, no nothing. They want to kill, you know?
There is no greater morality in our world than whites becoming a minority in their homeland and in the nations that their ancestors carved out of wilderness, be it the United States, South Africa, Rhodesia, New Zealand, Australia, Argentina, Chile, Brazil, Uruguay. Even Mexico. I mean, Mexico was a Spanish nation that unfortunately a lot of the Spaniards, interbred with the Amerindians. And if you look at the upper echelons of Mexican society, they look like white people. Well, they are white people. They are in Latin America, the upper echelons of Venezuela and Costa Rica and all these nations, they are white. I mean, they're truly Hispanics. And yet non-whites in these nations have been weaponized to be lobbed as demographic warfare against the United States. And I mean, it's depressing right now to look at the Drudge headline about, you know, the appeals court, the Ninth Circuit Court keeps the doors open, ruling against Trump in this crazy 3-0 decision. Refugees are flooding in, and it doesn't matter what the consequences are, because to those who truly are in control of the the greatest moral good is doing harm to the white majority.
Yeah,
it's that simple. It's that simple.
Replacement is the highest agenda, and we are not allowed to protect ourselves and defend our territories and have something which every other people are granted. But Paul, I want to continue to ask you more about this in the second segment. I wanted to ask you a bit about if you've actually seen the Dear White People trailer was released, as of course based off of a movie. Now they're going to go ahead. I think it was Netflix that was going to produce it. I want to ask you more about that and some of the other recent stories that you've covered on your website. But just tell us a little bit more about the truth about Selma. The last time, of course, you were on, we've talked primarily about Whitey on the Moon, which, of course, we still very much recommend. Pick up a copy of that if you haven't already. But the truth about Selma was recently released. It was as a smaller booklet, you said. Is it Kindle or a paperback, or what is it?
Yeah, there actually is a paperback. It's a very accessible little tome, only about 150 pages, and it's just an opportunity to counter the lies and to counter the vitriol that is used to induce white guilt among Americans whenever March comes along. I mean, go back to right before Donald Trump was inaugurated as president, and what happened with John Lewis, who is one of the only living people who partook, one of the main living leaders who was part of that march with Martin Luther King across the Selma Bridge. And Trump didn't back down. He attacked John Lewis and said, hey, you know, your district is crime ridden and businesses are fleeing, you know, yeah, basically said, F you. I'm not going to fall to my knees and shower you with praise and kiss your feet and shine your boots just because you marched across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And that was the moment I realized that Donald Trump was the real deal, because any other leader would have said, I can't wait to march with you across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in March of 2017 to showcase that, like you, I am committed to the enslavement of future generations of whites. So The Truth About Selma basically is a look at what has happened since 1965. White liberals across the United States, especially in the media and academia, they still want to live in a world where 1965 Selma never stopped, where white people are still in charge, where evil white cops are still patrolling the streets, and disenfranchised blacks are still marching for their rights, when that couldn't be farther from the truth. The city is completely dominated by black elected officials, be it in the executive and the legislative branch. You've got a black majority city council. You've got a black school board. Every aspect of government is black. And yet in 2015, Jesse Jackson was quoted as saying that white-owned businesses that want to leave shouldn't be allowed to, because that would endanger the already perilous economy of the 80% black city. So you've got this form of racial socialism where white people who own businesses in the eyes of blacks shouldn't be allowed to leave, because that would somehow impact blacks negatively. So Selma basically is the future. It's a Potemkin village. I hope I pronounced that correctly, the great Russian phrase.
Yeah, I looked up the term here, Paul. I think Potemkin village,
Potemkin,
I think it is.
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
Potemkin village. And I think that Selma is the ultimate poster child for a Potemkin village.
Which is a painted front, of course. It's just, you know, it's cardboard or a painted on nice facade, basically.
Precisely. It's supposed to be this wonderful relic of the civil rights era. But guess what? Life continues for 364 or 363 days of the year. So that every day in March, when the journalists show up to march across the bridge and snap pictures of white leaders, white conservatives castrating themselves and walking arm in arm with Barack Obama or John Lewis or Oprah Winfrey or other black celebrities, black elected officials, you know, guess what? Life continues to go on the rest of the year. And the life is basically exactly what white leaders and the white architects of Jim Crow long ago warned would grow roots if blacks were ever liberated. And that's what The Truth About Selma, in a nutshell, is all about. And it's not pretty, but it's a story that has to be told. And it's one that, just like Whitey on the Moon and Escape from Detroit and Black Mecca Down and the tragic city that's about Birmingham. It just shows that it's that all of these great milestones and these great lessons we're supposed to learn about how evil white people were and the joy of what transpires when black rule occurs. It's all nonsense and outright lies.
Yeah, interesting. It has to be one of the more unpopular opinions right now, considering the current kind of wisdom of the times that we have pushed to us from popular culture. However, there's many people, of course, that have been waking up to all of this since all the riots we've seen, since a lot of the these kinds of stories have broken time and time again, and you realize what really is going on. But I want to continue, Paul, talking more with you in the second segment here. We're going to take a short break. Just want to alert you guys then. Check out the books. We'll have links up to them from our website. You can also go to sbpdl.com. The books are linked up there. A lot more for you there to read. But yeah, stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back with Paul Kersey. We'll see you on the other side of this break.